This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we're going to be talking about, you may have heard of this movie, a little independent film called Avengers Age of Ultron. It's coming out this week. Also, bigger movies like Hyena, The Salt of the Earth, and The Clouds of Silmaria. We're also going to be talking about some news. We've got the trailer park. I've got a listener recommendation I'm finally going to get to. Box office predictions and the world famous DVD roundup. But first, before we go into any of that, this is how you can get in touch with me. If you want to email me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news that dropped, and it dropped really late last week, so I didn't get a chance to talk about it on last week's show. People went kind of insane about Jared Leto finally revealing kind of what he looks like as the Joker in the Suicide Squad movie. Now, this makes such a big deal because the Joker, of course, was played by Heath Ledger the last time. And of course, we all know what happened there. And it's the iconic Batman villain. So there's a rumor going around that he's going to show up as a cameo in Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, but that's for another story. Really, his first big screen return is going to be in the Suicide Squad. And let's just say the reaction was a little bit mixed. Now, Leto has been leaking out images of himself, cutting his hair, you know, getting his face ready, that sort of thing, but he wasn't in full makeup with the green hair and the white skin. Here's my problem with it, and a lot of people took issues with it. He's got tattoos all over him. And the tattoos are like, there's a Joker and there's a big smiley face one. It says damaged across his forehead and it says ha 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 all over his chest. He also has a grill, the metal teeth, which looks very white trash. I mean, I guess he would be the ultimate white trash because he is about as pale as you can get. That is the way the Joker looks. My problem is this doesn't look like the Joker. This looks like somebody trying to be the Joker. This doesn't look like somebody who's actually just insane. It's somebody who's wanting to be insane. So they write damaged on her forehead. And of course, there was this great little meme running around with Affleck as Batman, and he was all tatted up. I am the knight. And he says, my parents were killed. And it was just all over his body. And it's so heavy handed. And I hope that that doesn't stay now. There's actually rumor that that's not actually going to be in the movie. And that may have been Hollywood will do this sometimes. They will release images and ideas and casting ideas out to see what people's response will be. They did that when they originally were talking about casting Daniel Craig as James Bond. There was this rumor of like, what do you think about a black James Bond? And kind of people went nuts to it and they didn't like it. And so they said, okay, we're going to go back to the white guys. And they did that again a couple years ago. What if we have a black James Bond? And now people are warming more up to that. And that's how Hollywood sort of vets its ideas before it puts them into place. So maybe this Jared Leto Joker look was just to say, hey, what would people do if you saw this? It just has to make sense for me. But the Joker, I want an authentic Joker. Heath Ledger wasn't an authentic Joker. He worked as the Joker, but he was not the authentic Joker. I like the idea of going back to that. Now, of course, also with that, we've got some Suicide Squad character photos. One of them, of course, is Will Smith as Deadshot. Not him in the costume, but him, I guess, in his Superfly outfit, where he is going to be before he actually becomes a character. We'll see more about that when that comes closer to them actually releasing full photos. Also in superhero casting news, Issa Butterfield from Hugo and Ender's Game, he is in top running for Spider-Man, being the next Spider-Man. Now, a lot of people are talking, oh yeah, they're going back to a teenage Spider-Man, which I guess was what Andrew Garfield kind of was. Here's the problem. You know, unless you cast a Michael J. Fox kind of person who looks perpetually young, they're going to get older. I mean, Issa Butterfield, he was in Hugo almost like 4 years ago or something like that, and he's considerably grown up since then. You know, who knows? Maybe he's going to do a Fred Savage thing and look totally different than he did when he was a little kid. Speaking of Batman photos, there's been a quote-unquote full-color photo of Ben Affleck as Batman released. A lot of online outlets are saying it's the full-color picture of Ben Affleck as Batman, because, of course, his face was on the Superman versus Batman posters that went out last week. The only difference is that his chin is flesh colored. The bat suit is still gray. There's no full color anything in this except for his flesh. Well, we know what Ben Affleck's face looks like. It's just his bottom half of his face. Another interesting little tidbit of development news that's coming out is James Cameron is now talking about 4 Avatar sequels. I've always said he better hope that these movies do well, because if it runs out of steam by 3 and people don't like it, you know, they're really kind of rolling the dice on this. I think then you're going to be talking greenlighting 4 things. Who knows what's going to happen? I think this could be a potential disaster if they don't do as well as the first one did. And they may, but they may not. There's also a couple 21 Jump Street news. First of all, the 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover is apparently going to happen with Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. Just keep Will Smith as far away from the producer credit in this movie as you can, and I'll be happy. Now, also on the 21 Jump Street front, they're doing a spin-off characterized as a, quote, female-driven 21 Jump Street movie. Now, here's my problem with it. I'm all for women doing stuff in Hollywood. I'm all for women directors and producers, and I think that's great. But you haven't really overcome anything if everyone talks about you as a woman director. And I said this, I remember saying this 25 years ago when Penny Marshall, I thought she was an incredible pioneer because she was directing stuff and she wasn't being categorized as a woman director. She would direct stuff like Awakenings, and she directed Big. These are movies that didn't have to be directed by a woman, but they were. And that I thought was real progression. I mean, somebody like Kathryn Bigelow, talk about somebody who is the most progressive in that. Kathryn Bigelow was directing major movies in the 80s. That would have otherwise gone to men. And the fact that she was just directing them, I thought was incredibly good for women. But to say we're going to have a female-driven 21 Jump Street movie, that seems somewhat token, don't you think? Or a female-centric Ghostbusters. And this seems to be Sony's game plan now. They're going to have a spinoff with women, but the real story is still with the dudes. And then even the ones with the women, they're still going to be directed by men anyways. It's sort of this, you're making progress when you really aren't. It's sort of like saying, oh, we're just going to have a black version of whatever. Black version of Annie. A black version of The Wizard of Oz. They still become the black version of whatever the movie is. I mean, when you talk about Will Smith as being a big name, no one was saying, let's do a black version of Men in Black. No one was saying, let's do a black version of I Am Legend. Because he was just in those movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one is The Visit. It's M. Night Shyamalan's new movie, opens September 11th.
My parents asked if their grandchildren could visit them for a week.
Bedtime here is 9:30. It's probably best you two shouldn't come out of your room after that. See you in the morning.
They're hiding something. Mom, you need to come right now.
Would you mind getting inside the oven to clean it?
I like Shyamalan's horror Twilight Zone kind of movies. His last couple films have stunk. After Earth was terrible, and The Last Airbender was terrible. So like epic sci-fi, I think he's terrible at. But I even like The Happening. I thought that was kind of fun. Now this one, I'm interested in seeing because it's M. Night Shyamalan. It's kind of going back to his horror roots. It looks like a Twilight Zone episode, but it is found footage. And you know how much I hate found footage. But here's the deal. You can't tell from the audio, but in the trailer, it's not terribly shaky. Because Shyamalan is a very steady, deliberate director. He does not shake the camera much anyways in his regular stuff. And I'll be curious to see what he does with a found footage format, because it doesn't look like they're just running around with the camera the whole time. There actually seems to be some static shots, which I think could work out well. Who knows? Maybe it'll be fine. I like I said, I'm curious. This is probably the most excited I am to see a Shyamalan movie in years. The other one I want to talk about is The Last Witch Hunter, starring Vin Diesel, which opens on October 23rd.
You are the greatest soldier of the Axe and Cross. In a war between our world and the next.
Well, hello, Witch Hunter. Here's what you don't understand. What you can never understand. You will be hunted.
Call me crazy, but I'm getting a real Seventh Son feel to this. It's really odd to see Michael Caine in this movie when I really would expect to see Nicolas Cage. That was Michael Caine narrating at the beginning. This looks like it could be downright terrible. And generally, Vin Diesel movies that are sort of vehicle movies that aren't the Fast and Furious films kind of are pretty bad. You know, stuff like Riddick. It might be at that level, but I hope it's not as bad as Seventh Son, because that was pretty bad. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the clouds of Sils Maria and the salt of the earth. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming back at you. We are getting ready to start reviewing some films. Before we start talking about the Avengers, I know everyone's excited about that one. Everyone wants to know what I thought of the Avengers. Everybody wants to talk about the Hulk smashing. But before we talk about that, let's talk about some smaller films. Some stuff that you could say would be alternatives to the giant blockbuster movie where pretty much everybody else is going to be seeing this weekend. So let's talk about Clouds of Sils Maria. And it stars Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart. What's notable about it is Kristen Stewart won a prestigious acting award for it. I know. Bizarre that Kristen Stewart was honored for her acting. After being in five Twilight films and acting her way into the ground, she actually won an award. She's the first American to win this award. In the film, an aging actress finds a personal crisis in playing a different role in a play that made her famous.
And the play tells a simple story. An older woman falls in love with a scheming girl that has her wrapped around her little finger.
I played Sigrid when I was 18. For me, it was more than a role.
Sigrid and Helena are one and the same person. And because you were Sigrid, only you can be Helena now.
So who's gonna play Sigrid?
Torun Ellis. She's a lot more interesting than her interviews and profile.
I will play the one who drives her to suicide.
Now that was a really quick description of the film. The film's about more than just somebody playing in a play. It's Kristen Stewart plays the assistant to Juliette Binoche's character, and she is an actress who is, of course, getting older. She had her big break in this play, and then eventually was the film. The character did, playing a young version of this sort of May-September romance between these two women in an office place. And of course, in her initial career, in her early career, she played the young character. And she is now being asked to sort of do a revival of the play and play the older character, which is, of course, the other side of the coin to the play, so to speak. And she is struggling with it because the guy who wrote the play, who kind of gave her a big break, he had just died. Then a lot of the movie is the two of them, Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart, running lines through the play. And there's this weird crossover between the characters and real life. And there's reflecting between what's happening in the play and what's happening to these two women. And sort of the conflict that they have and how Binoche's character is unable to divorce herself from the character she originally played. And she's having trouble playing the flip side. She's having trouble getting into that character, and she's causing problems and not, because she's older, she identifies with it, but she doesn't allow herself to identify with it. So it's this very deep and intricate and dense character study, and it flips the dialogue back and forth from them actually running lines into having conversations. And I mean, it gets a little bit confusing at times. If you like these kind of talkie movies, I got a friend, a critic in town, and he loves these kind of talkie movies. You put two people in a room together and have them talk, and he'll love it. That's just the kind of films he really enjoys, as opposed to like movies like The Avengers, which he doesn't really care about. I appreciate what they were doing. I will say that I thought they did a great job getting Kristen Stewart to actually act. And I think with Kristen Stewart, the key is she has talent. And I remember, before she did Twilight, she was really getting a lot of some interesting work. But I said this when Twilight came out, Twilight kind of ruined her for a while. And the reason it ruined her is because it was such padlam crap. In the first movie, she established the character of Bella. She was under Catherine Hardwicke, who directed it. And Catherine Hardwicke, I don't think, really directs her actors. I think she just said, whatever you did is fine. And it was a terrible recreation of the character. Even if you go, you talk to fans of the books, they will even say, Kristen Stewart did a terrible job playing Bella in that first movie. And that was what was set in stone. So every subsequent director after that and every film made after that, it was like, well, this is how Bella acts. Not to mention the fact that Kristen Stewart was in her teenage and early 20s when she was doing these. And so she was acting like any arrogant teenager or person in their 20s who thinks they know better than everybody else. So this, I think it kind of ruined her because she didn't take good direction. And I saw stuff she made while she was making the Twilight movies and they were not very good. And it's because she didn't take direction. And if you watch this movie, I wouldn't say they've gotten rid of all of her tics. Because she still sort of shakes her head a little bit like you know, Jeff Goldblum in The Fly when she talks. You know, and she does the that kind of mouth breathing response. But they really suppress a lot of them. And I'm wondering if that's the director who did that. If the director said, like what Terry Gilliam famously did with 12 Monkeys, he went to Bruce Willis. He said, here's a list of 10 things that you do that I don't want you doing in this movie. His normal Bruce Willis-isms. And I think that's what the director did to Kristen Stewart. He's like, look, these are things that you do. And these are things that you're kind of known for and people make fun of you for it. And they're not good acting. They're covers. They're little tricks that actors do to fill the air before they say their next line. That's why her performance is actually really good. And Binoche's good in it too. Binoche's a great actress. But my biggest problem with the movie is everyone's just kind of a jerk. So much of this movie is Binoche's character just bellyaching about her problem with the role and finding her place. And then they have this thing where they really kind of try and stick it to superhero and science fiction movies where they become, I mean, insultingly dismissive about it. And it's very easy to do that and then put in a fake movie in there because they have a scene where Chloe Grace Moretz plays another actress that they're wooing for this role. And she plays in this basically essentially a crappy science fiction movie, but it makes tons of money. And I'm watching it and I'm like, you guys didn't even do the crappy science fiction movie right. It looks terrible. It's sort of like when you watch a movie and they say, oh, we're going to watch a porn, and they start watching the porn and you're like, you obviously have never watched a porn. Because this is not what happens. Or if you go, they go into a strip club and you have the guy standing up at the stage going, woo, hooting and hollering and throwing money. That usually doesn't happen in the strip clubs. The guys watch strippers the way they watch a lecture on economics. That's how guys react. Ultimately, it's just a bellyaching, whiny actress, and she's so self-absorbed and so arrogant and so into her own pretension that it irritated me. So I'm going to have to say, even though it was an interesting movie and a huge stretch for Kristen Stewart, The Clouds of Silmaria, I have to say, kind of sucks. Sorry, people.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the salt of the earth right now. The life and career of photographer Sebastio Salgado is examined in this Oscar-nominated documentary.
A photographer is literally somebody drawing with light. A man writing and rewriting the world with lights and shadows. He traveled to the four corners of the world as a social photographer and a witness of the human condition. His photographs called worldwide attention to the people of Africa and many other places.
This is a documentary. You go see it if you want to see a documentary about photography. And it's this guy did a lot of black and white photography, and he went to horrible places in the world, oppression and war and poverty, and documented this stuff. Some horrible things that happened. He went through his life, and it shows him when it talks about him as in his younger days of how he got started in photography. So it's an interesting look into this thing. And the biggest strength is the photography and the use of the photographs and using it to tell this guy stories with the photographs that he took. And it is an interesting movie. It is a bit self-serving, though. Whenever you have a spotlight film, because it's a spotlight film, it's co-directed by his son, it's very much a, look how awesome this guy is. And that wasn't a great thing for me to watch. And at the end, it's showing he's trying to figure out what he's going to do next. And he's from Brazil. And he goes back to Brazil and he starts to try and rebuild a rainforest. Not a whole rainforest, but like a section of area that he owns. And it's his work in doing that to try and find something significant to do later in his life. I mean, it's an interesting movie, but I wasn't terribly thrilled with it. I didn't get a chance to see it before the award season. I just got a chance to see it this week, so I didn't feel like I was missing anything. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say The Salt of the Earth. I'm right on the fence. Personally, I thought it kind of sucked, but I think if you like that kind of movie, you'll enjoy it. But I'm still going to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. All right, that's it. I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Avengers, Age of Ultron, and Hyena. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr assembling for action here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk about the movie that everybody's talking about. That is this week. That is Avengers: Age of Ultron. The heroes from the Avengers battle an artificial intelligence in a weapons platform bent on destroying life on Earth.
I tried to create a suit of armor around the world, but I created something terrible.
Artificial intelligence.
It's called the Ultron program.
I'm sick of watching people pay for our mistakes.
Isn't why we fight so we can end the fight and go home?
Well, you amazingly failed.
There's only one path to peace. Their extinction.
It wasn't until The Avengers came out in 2012 that I started to consider myself a Marvel movie fanboy. I thought the Iron Man movies, the first two Iron Man movies, were fine. I actually liked Part 2. I actually liked Part 2 better than Part 1. I thought Thor was okay and Captain America was fine. And I really liked The Incredible Hulk, but that was so early in the process. And then they never got another movie. But it wasn't until The Avengers came out 3 years ago that I saw the light. I thought The Avengers was one of the greatest superhero movies I'd seen ever, really. I wouldn't say it is the best, but it's up there. Joss Whedon, the director, took all these four superheroes and put them together in a movie and had other people involved. Like, you had Hawkeye and Black Widow, who did not have their standalone movies. And you had Nick Fury, and you had Maria Hill, and you had all these characters put together. And, of course, they brought Loki back from Thor as the bad guy. But what was so fascinating about the movie is it worked so well. It just fit together so well. It was so well written. And the action was amazing, and it was funny, and it was just a great summer movie. It was what summer movies are all about. That was the first Avengers. And after that movie, pretty much every Marvel movie I have been totally sold on. I liked Iron Man 3 a lot. I liked Thor 2. I know a lot of people diss Thor 2. I liked Thor 2. I thought Thor 2 was far better than the first one, and I thought it was a better made movie. And I liked Captain America 2. I thought that was incredibly done. And of course, then you had Guardians of the Galaxy, was right now as an outlier. It's still that Marvel feel, but it's not meshed into the rest of this world yet. So I was crazy excited for Avengers: Age of Ultron. And here's the problem when you're that excited for something like this. You can easily get disappointed. And I wonder what I would have thought of this movie had I seen it in a vacuum. I wonder what I would have thought of this movie if I hadn't seen The Avengers and loved every single movie that came out after that leading up to this film. So I'm a little deflated about this movie because it could pass the good stuff. Lots of action. The characters are all there. In fact, they have all the characters. Every single character that's ever shown up in this franchise is in this. It really brings everybody in there, which is great for sort of the fan to be like, oh, hey, there's War Machine, and there's Falcon, and there's, ironically, Gwyneth Paltrow and Natalie Portman are in this movie, but they have an argument about which is a better girlfriend, Tony Stark and Thor do. So it has some great stuff in it, and you get to see your heroes together again, and you get to see them fight some bad guys. If you want to see Hulk smash, you're going to see Hulk smash. It has that in there. But here's where I get a little disappointed. The writing wasn't that good. And because it had some pretty major flaws to the writing. And I'm not talking about flaws that like honest trailers can pick apart and make fun of. Because you had movies like Pacific Rim. They make fun of Pacific Rim in honest trailers. And I love Pacific Rim. Because Pacific Rim was so well done, you didn't care about the stupidity of the film. It's sort of like the flaws in Empire Strikes Back for the first Avengers. The first one that came out 3 years ago, it was so good, you just ignored the stupidity. You ignored the silliness. You ignored the leaps in logic. Just as in Empire Strikes Back, as great as that movie is, people ignore the fact that the Millennium Falcon and Luke Skywalker are on two totally different timelines. Figure it out. It's like a long weekend for them on the Millennium Falcon, and it's weeks or months of training on Dagobah for Luke. I mean, they don't even change their clothes on the Millennium Falcon. the fact that those don't line up and fit together, nobody cares because the movie's so good. And that's the way the first Avengers was. This one and the flaws are pretty significant, but the movie itself isn't so awesomely good that it overshadows those. Part of it's the setup. Yeah, it's kind of neat to have them all fighting. It has a big action sequence at the beginning where everybody's fighting together, and that's cool to watch.
Sure.
Then they kind of have to manufacture conflict. And you see this on TV all the time where you have a great cast of characters on a TV show, and then they get to the end of the season and they say, well, we need to get a cliffhanger. The best way to get a cliffhanger is have a fight inside the team. And so they manufacture some BS drama for them to break up or have some sort of cliffhanger. And then you got to wait, you got to go through that. And then you got to go through about one or two episodes the next season until you can get back to the basics of them just working together as a team. And that's the way this is. They manufacture some conflict. And then what the creation of the bad guy, Ultron, and James Spader does a great job as the voice of Ultron. He's this artificially intelligent program that they pull out a Loki scepter, and Tony Stark's like, I got to put it in this computer and give it access to all these weapons that I'm obsessing about, but I've never talked about this weapons platform called Ultron. I can't think of nothing else but that, but I haven't mentioned it ever before, except just now, but I need to put that in there. And at no point does he sit there and say, maybe that's Loki's scepter. Maybe there's some evil left in that. What could possibly go wrong? So it's such a quick slam bang to get to that, the origin of this bad guy. It's dumb. It's supremely stupid at that time. He's a great villain, but he's kind of squandered. Then you have these other characters, the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and they're kind of cool, but they're a little aimless, and you don't really kind of figure out how they fit in. And it's not terribly well written. It's really kind of ham-fisted together, and the movie was in danger of collapsing under its own weight because you had all six Avengers, that's including Hawkeye and Black Widow, and then you had Nick Fury, and then you had Maria Hill, and then of course you had the supporting cast of Don Cheadle and Anthony Mackie as Falcon, and then you had Jarvis, and the guy playing Jarvis, he's the Visions in there, and then you've got the bad guy, which isn't just Ultron, it's also Scarlet Witch, and I mean, you normally don't have to juggle that many people all at once, and that, I think, it just didn't hold together as well. And then on top of it, the action sequences are so similar. They all look the same. You could pretty much edit them together. And what was neat about the first Avengers, each action sequence, the opening action sequence when the shield blows up, the fight to get Loki, the fight in the woods, the Hulk turning into the Hulk on the helicarrier, and the big battle in New York, they all look different and they all felt like very different scenes. There's an action sequence that happens in Africa. There's an action sequence that happens in somewhere in Northern Europe. There's nothing to differentiate. And then it gets kind of muted with color because, of course, you got to get darker with the sequel. I'll see this again on DVD and Blu-ray. I'll probably like it. But it reminds me of when I saw Star Trek Into Darkness, and it just wasn't as good as Star Trek. It's still decent. It still works for what it is, but I wanted more. And maybe we'll get more in Infinity Wars when we've got new directors. So with that, I gotta say, Avengers Age of Ultron kinda rocks.
It kinda rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Quickly, let's talk about Hyena. A London policeman finds himself stuck in the middle of a turf war between rival organized crime groups.
Target for us at the moment is a family of two brothers. They're very heavy traffickers.
You put us down for drugs, we do the same, man. You put us down for murder, we take you down.
A good cop. That's why we picked you.
The biggest name attached to this is actually Nicholas Winding Refn, who directed Drive and Only God Forgives. And this guy's turning into the Quentin Tarantino of gritty crime thrillers because he's now making a bigger name for himself by endorsing films than actually making movies himself. He endorsed this one. His name's on the poster even. And he also is a big fan of Alejandro Jodorowsky, which is, of course, what helped bring Jodorowsky's Dune into being. But this one is not directed or written or anything by Refn, but it's a very low-budget crime thriller. But the problem is, there is not a single likable character in this movie. And I just can't watch movies like that. And it's so grim and bleak and awful, and the people are so terrible. And as bad as the heroes are, the bad guys are even sleazier. And you leave this movie feeling like you need a shower. And it just made me feel blah. And that's my review of it, blah. The good guy, The only really reason that he's going up against these crime families is because they messed up his way to get money out of the drug trade. And he saves this woman who's sold into sexual slavery. And the only reason he saves her is because she has an inside track on him getting his money. So he's not even a good guy. He's being good by default. It's exhausting to watch. So I'm going to have to say Hyena sucks.
It sucks.
All right, and that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a listener recommendation, the box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. We're back with Fat Guys at the Movies. Kevin Carr here, your fearless host, ushering you into a full weekend of movies. We've gotten the reviews out of the way. Now we're going to look at a listener recommendation. This comes from Chris from Nebraska. Now, it's one that he actually sent me this request, about a month or two ago. It's been a while. And I just had, we had so many movies coming out, and I was covering so many things that I just didn't have time to really devote to this one. So I figured, hey, when Avengers comes out, there'll be some things in the theaters, but it won't be packed. It's the only big release. So let's talk about this movie. And this is The Guest. It's directed by Adam Wingard, who did You're Next, which I absolutely love. It didn't do well at all, which is probably why The Guest didn't get much of a release. But The Guest came out last year. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see it. I really did. I wanted to see it. And it has some names that are starting to become familiar. Micah Monroe is in it, and she was in It Follows, and she's just been cast in the Independence Day sequel. So this is one that's a relatively recent movie, but I hadn't had a chance to see it, and Chris wanted to know what I thought about it, so he recommended it to me. So in The Guest, a soldier visits the family of a friend who was killed in action, only to become a bigger threat in their home.
Mrs. Peterson?
Yes?
My name is David. Mrs. Peterson, I knew your son, Caleb. I was with him when he died. He asked me to check on y'all. And so, we're gonna be good friends. Mrs. Peterson, are you sure you're comfortable with me staying here?
I think it could be a good thing for us.
You know, I promised Caleb I would do anything I could to help your family.
Just like Wingard's You're Next, The Guest looked like it was going down a road that I was not particularly interested in seeing. I'm not a big fan of home invasion movies, of just people being victimized. I don't like watching people being victimized. And both The Guest and You're Next are set up that way. I mean, You're Next appears to be a almost torture porn version of a home invasion movie. That's what I thought it was going to be, and I was actually dreading to go see it. But it's a much smarter movie, Your Next is. And Your Next is a bit of a deconstruction of the genre itself, and it picks apart the problems with these kind of home invasion movies. And I appreciated that. Now, The Guest, I was like, oh, because you can tell from the poster, it shows the guy, and he looks evil. He just looks evil. I mean, and you're like, oh, no, this is going to be some guy who comes in, and then he's going to torture the family, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that there are no victims in this movie. But there's a lot more interesting things happening in it than just a creepy guy staying in their house. It takes this kind of movie, the kind of movie I don't particularly like, and it turns it on its ear enough that I actually really got into it. The stars of the movie, Dan Stevens plays the guest who is this mysterious friend of this soldier that got killed. This movie plays on the trust that people will have for friends of their children, especially their deceased children. It's a modern horror movie, not just because it's something that's kind of scary that happens, but you look at this and you say, with the amount of support that our military does get from a lot of people, and I mean, even people who don't like what the military is doing and what the commander-in-chief or whoever is the commander-in-chief at the time is doing, there's still a lot of respect out there for the military under men in uniform, men and women in uniform. And there is a groundswell of support nowadays for the American military, for the American soldier and Marines and sailors and airmen that you didn't see necessarily, say, during the Vietnam War. And that's a good thing now. But see, what this movie does is it uses that against you. And it takes the fact that you're hardwired now to respect and honor them and be as welcoming as possible, that you might overlook some things that could cause real problems. And that's the genius of The Guest. That's what makes that movie work. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's a neat movie. I don't want to say too much about it because I don't want to give anything away. But it's a chilling movie, and it's more than just an insane guy. There's a lot more to it. And it's sort of like, I mean, it's not as complex and intricate and deep as Cabin in the Woods is in terms of deconstructing the entire horror genre, but it has that sudden break from what looks like a very regular movie to suddenly turning into something that you're like, oh, this is a completely different movie at this point. And that kind of made it neat. So yeah, The Guest, I'm going to say The Guest rocks. So there you go, Chris. Chris from Nebraska, thank you very much for that recommendation.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. And was I correct? Last week, I said $20 million for the Avengers, The Age of Adeline. I was wrong on that. And I am big enough to admit that when I was inaccurate, when I'm wrong on something. But I had it in my heart. It was in the right place. And in fact, it actually won the Friday. Age of Adeline made the most money on Friday. But then that dropped off. And of course, Furious 7 picked up a little bit. And Paul Blart actually did. But Furious 7 ended up making just under $18 million, which, you know, it's, oh gosh, what week of release is this one? This is in its fourth week of release. So yeah, it's doing well. It's going to take a huge hit this weekend, of course, because it is not the Avengers. And the Avengers goes essentially for the same market. Paul Blart kind of came up. I mean, it didn't drop as much. That's the whole thing. It had a relatively minor drop, less than 40% drop for Paul Blart. And that ended up be with just less than $15 million. And then Age of Adeline for $13 million, which still wasn't bad for Age of Adeline. That was an okay movie. Now, Little Boy and the Water Diviner both came in under $10 million. And that's not a big surprise because I didn't see much support or interest for those movies. Now, this weekend, obviously the no-brainer is that Avengers Age of Ultron is going to win. I really don't think that Get Hard is going to have a resurgence and suddenly come up from making $3.5 million last week to making more than the Avengers. 3 years ago, the first Avengers came out on the same weekend, and it made a historic $207 million over the course of the weekend. That included Thursday night previews. And it was the first time any movie had made that much money in the opening weekend. And then it went on to make like $500 and some million in the States, $600 million in whatever it was in the States. And then overseas, it made like $1.5 billion. It did extremely well. So people are saying, well, you know, it has to make at least $207 million over this weekend to at least be comparable to the first Avengers. Because everything else is the same. It's IMAX 3D. It is as close to a one-to-one comparison with only 3 years of inflation going in. I mean, if it makes under $200 million over the weekend, that's not good. But it will. I think it's going to make $210. Some people are pushing even higher than that. I think $210 is a nice estimate for Avengers Age of Ultron. Just the hype alone, that's what everybody's waiting for. And, you know, it's this and Star Wars. Those are the two huge mainstream box office blockbuster movies of 2015. So I think that's what Avengers Age of Ultron, and everything else is going to be peanuts. I mean, Furious 7 topped the weekend last week with just under $18 million. It's going to probably drop to 3 or 4 just because Avengers is going to suck all its audience away. What interesting note, though, about Avengers Age of Ultron, if it makes that $210 million or more that I'm predicting, put this in perspective. Avengers, take the first Avengers out of the equation, and that's almost as much as Captain America 2 made in its entire North American run. And we all knew what a hit that was last year. Now, if you were to remove Guardians of the Galaxy and the Iron Man movies, $210 million is more than any of the other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies have made at all in the United States. So just this first weekend, Avengers is going to be in like the top, you know, it's going to be at least in the middle of the highest grossing Marvel movies, which is astounding. It's still going to make tons of money. And it already made $201 million overseas, I think, last week, because it came out a week or two ago. So, yeah, this is going to be a monster hit. And I don't think the disappointment that I and other critics are feeling about this, I don't think it's going to be reflected in the box office. I think people want to see escapist fiction and Hulk smash, and that's what they're going to get. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. Actually, quite a bit of movies that are out this week. There's Inherent Vice, which I was not a big fan of, but if you like P.T. Anderson, that is now out on DVD and Blu-ray. Also, Paddington, which is charming and sweet and adorable. If you haven't seen this, watch the movie. It's not just for kids. It is a neat little movie. It is cute and sweet. I really enjoyed Paddington. I can't talk enough good about this movie. It was a really sweet, adorable movie. The Wedding Ringer is also out, another January release. Was not terribly big, not terribly huge. I thought it was okay. I think Josh Gad and Kevin Hart do a great job together. The Boy Next Door is not in my stinker because it is actually enjoyable to watch for a stupid movie. It is so dumb. Totally make funnable. So that's what The Boy Next Door is about. Then we've got a couple TV shows. You've got Royal Pain Season 6, which is a terrible show on USA about concierge doctors, but I still watch it simply because it's something my wife and I can watch in the summer. There's also Covert Affairs Season 5, a whole bunch of USA Network shows. That's about a CIA agent. And then there's Suits Season 4, which also came out this week. That one is about a guy faking being a lawyer in a firm and having to sort of hide his past. And then finally, The Mentalist, which is still on CBS. That is in Season 7. Now, the stinker of the week is The Gambler. That's the one with Mark Wahlberg. Not a good movie. I don't know why they pushed it for an awards run, but it came out there during the award season, and it was awful. That's the stinker. And that is it for the show. I need to go. Next week, we're going to be talking about Hot Pursuit, which, of course, the cop movie with Reese Witherspoon and Sofia Vergara. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.